Welcome to the Business of Show Business podcast with me, Jamie Boddy. On this podcast, I'm going to be chatting to industry experts and up-and-coming creatives as we unpack the side hustles, the stories, and the skills that make the entertainment and creative industries tick. So if you want to thrive and not just survive and build the career that you deserve, you're in the right place. Welcome back to the Business of Show Business. It's season 6, and I thought, what better way to start this season than bringing someone back from season 1? So today I'm joined yet again by the lovely Graham Pickering, who is a casting consultant, educator, and choreographer. So in this episode, we're going to go behind the casting panel and talk all things the business of show business. Graham, welcome back. You are the first returnee.
Oh my goodness. Yes, I'm really excited to chat with you today, and I can't wait to elaborate further on what we chatted about last time.
I feel like I should have got you like a hat or a pin badge or something to
welcome
say like,
back.
Yeah, welcome back.
Or balloons or something.
Yes. How are you doing? Have you got jet lag? You've literally just come back from a European casting tour with Celebrity Cruise Line. Mm-hmm. You are a casting partner with them. Where did you go and what did that entail?
Yeah, it's been a really good 2 weeks. It's been a really busy but rewarding and successful couple of weeks. So we went to Rome, we went over to Spain and did some auditions in Madrid. Then we went to Netherlands, I went to Amsterdam, and then we came back and did a week in London, which was really, really great, and lots of talent found.
Let's go back now into what cruise ships are. We did cruise ships many years ago, not the same contract, but different ones, and I think there used to be a stigma with cruise ships. Mm-hmm. Even though we had the best time, we were pushed so hard as dancers, but I think nowadays, the shows, the production value, the amount of cruise ships and opportunities there are, they're huge. So now, as a cruise veteran, I've been a performer and in casting. What are cruise ships like these days?
They are amazing. They really have changed the game. And what you said about, you know, back in the day, I think cruise ships were never bad at all, but there was that perception about them. Yeah. And people thought, oh, well, you know, and then them TV shows where they maybe have judges saying, oh, you sound very cruise ship. Well, what does that really mean? So I think cruise ships had something to prove and to say, okay, well, we'll show you what cruise ship entertainment is. And they've, you know, particularly those big lines, they've invested a lot of money in their entertainment package and product. They're using exceptional creatives that are working on huge, big TV-based things here, concert world tours, musical theatre, West End, Broadway, all these kinds of creatives. And I think that's what's really elevated the product on board, which gives the audience, the guests on board, an amazing experience and is making it why they would maybe choose a cruise as their holiday. But it also gives that performer something really special to be a part of. And they're going to be working in these world-class shows with excellent creatives and traveling the world at the same time, yeah. Which I think is pretty cool.
And I think with cruise ships, there's such a way to cut your teeth because not only are you doing potentially the same as a West End contract, doing up to 8 shows a week, depending on the itinerary, you're learning circus skills, aerial, you're potentially having to deal with last minute reblocks because of sickness, yeah. A rocky ship, whatever yeah. It is. There's a real way, I think, for performers to build on their stamina. So you cast singers, immersive actors as well, drag queens, you've cast on cruise ships, performers. What makes a performer stand out at a cruise audition?
I think it's about being true to yourself and bringing your personality through. I think, you know, we always look for really good technique that's both vocally or physically within your dance technique. We do need to see that and your training coming through to see that. But I think one big thing is about showing your personality through the performance. Like on a ship show, generally, I would say you are playing yourself. Like even if it's a story-driven show, unless it's a book musical, you do need to bring your personality through your work because you are elevating someone's holiday. So if, you know, energy is infectious, yeah. Isn't it? If someone's having a good time, you're having a good time watching. And we want to give the guests an experience that's memorable. And I think that comes through in your performance. So we really do need to see that. And I think people that really do believe in who they are and bring that really do stand out. And listen, if they're not quite right for that product and they aren't cast there, if they always do that, they're going to find the correct company for them because every company is offering something slightly different and different different styles of shows. And I think they will find exactly where they fit if they just completely be true to themselves and bring that through. If you're on your holiday and there's someone on the stage living their best life, it's going to make you smile and instantly make your holiday memorable. So we want to try and find that in the audition process as well, which is going to make us remember that person after the audition and then also going to lead on to someone having a great holiday while watching them.
I think what's lovely there is that's also the soft skill. So yes, they need to be a great singer, dancer, yeah. actor, but it's the listening to the feedback you give, giving over their performance, energy, how they work collaboratively with in that audition process, yeah. really. So what, you said something on season one, actually, in the podcast, where if you're auditioning in Covent Garden, you always say you're on as soon as you get off the tube. Mm-hmm. Can you elaborate maybe a bit on that? And then maybe what are some of the red or green flags when it comes to auditioning for a cruise line?
Yeah, I think you've got to remember that your personality is so important for a particular cruise ship because you're living on board. I think for any job, I think it's really important that you're the right fit personally, as well as your ability and talent. Talent is a huge part of getting a job, but it only takes you so far. You've got to be the right person as well for that job. And I think that's even more important when you're living on a cruise ship for 6, 7, 8, 9 months at a time with a whole team, and you've got to mix with multiple cultures in all different departments. And I think, so that is an important thing. And I think if you're not going to be greeted at your audition necessarily how you would want to greet somebody, then you're not going to necessarily stand a good shot, because not only are you not going to fit into that cast, we also don't want you to be working on board, potentially not being the way people want you to be. We want this to be a memorable experience, and just be happy and just enjoy it. And I think you want to always turn up to your auditions ready to go. And that's both physically and in your mental state as well. Yeah.
And I remember before in season one, when you said about how you're always on, it's like when you get to Covent Garden, you don't know if you're getting your meal deal next to the casting director yeah. or the choreographer. And when I used to work at Royal Caribbean and assist with their auditions, I used to sign people in and I would hear dancers slagging off that they were there or they hadn't been in court for this show and they don't want to do this. And then I would go and sit on the panel and I'd have to say to the casting team, like, they're fantastic, but just so you're aware, they don't want to be here. Mm-hmm. Why would you put them on a 9-month contract? Yeah. So what are maybe some of those red or green flags you see? What, when someone walks into the room, yeah. do you look at how they interact at the side? Yeah. Do you look at how they interact with the person doing registration? Yeah. And is a red flag maybe really poor email etiquette? Like, what are some of those red and green flags?
We'll talk about emails in a second. That's another yes. thing for me. But in the room, yeah, there is things that make you stand out. Like if you're given instruction, like, could we move the lines around, rotate the lines, and someone's at the front just refuses to ever move. I know why that is, because they're wanting to make sure they're seen, and they yeah. also wanted to be able to see the choreographer or the director of whatever's happening. But you know, you do need to follow the instructions. And I think that whether it's on purpose or not, if you're not willing to move in the room, it kind of makes you appear like you're not a team player. And I think team skills and working as one is so, so important. Like I say, that's a huge thing. Emails is a completely other conversation. Yes. Like, you know, email etiquette. I think it's so interesting seeing how the world has evolved for a lot of positive reasons, but sometimes it can make things that are actually now easier seem harder. Like, you know, back in the day when we'd have to, like, you know, hand our headshots in, we'd have to give a chunk of headshots yeah. to our agent to deliver yeah. to casting director's officers. And now yeah. you can do it directly, yeah. instantly on email.
Even though we look super young, yeah. that's what we had to do.
Back in the day, that used to happen. yeah. But now it's all instantaneously on yeah. email. And sometimes people write the most amazing emails. They write a great cover letter. They attach everything in a really good way. And it's super easy and accessible for a casting director to see. Like, you know, you're seeing a lot of emails on a daily basis. So the easiest way of getting your information across and clear is the best way to present it, because it's going to allow that casting director to see what you need as soon as possible. But I get, I did a thing on my Instagram about it. I get on a daily basis people just sending me a spotlight link or a YouTube link, and there's literally not any hello,
intro, nothing.
Just literally a link. And it happens all the time. And when I speak to other casting directors and other friends of that, they have it too. And they go, God, Graham, I'm so pleased you said that. And I'm like, it's been going on for years now. And I think that's something that maybe the performers aren't aware that that's kind of strange. It's the same as maybe throwing a CV in somebody's face when you check in an audition. Like, you would never do that. You'd say, hello, my name's Evan, give you it. So we've got to think about the skills both ways. And I think, but that to me is a little bit of a red flag. I think when you're saying name red flags, if you're unable to, you know, everyone's got different skills and some people aren't necessarily the best at writing. So yeah. that's completely fine. But if you're then just sending a link without even yeah. a hello, it does make me little concerned that you maybe are not quite the right person to work with in a team situation, no matter how talented you are. So I think it's the initial introduction that it's the first thing you're doing to introduce who you are. So I think that's very important to get right. And it doesn't need to be lengthy and long. It just needs to be to the point and very clear and very easy and accessible for people to find out your information.
Yeah, that email, it's just a handshake, isn't it, really? Then once you're in the room, that's when your soft skills, like your personal brand and your talent, will get you over the line. And obviously, I know you go above and beyond, so you're probably still nice enough to look at the spotlight thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I know a lot of people wouldn't, because time is money, and you're sometimes not getting paid for those extra hours of just going on the spotlight, figuring out who they are, what skills, where you would cast them. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really important. You get potentially hundreds of emails per day when you are casting certain product projects. Because not only do you cast for cruise ship, you've also cast for tours before, pantomimes, holiday parks. What are maybe some of the things people can do with an email? What should maybe be in a media kit? And what I mean by that, should they have ready to go mm-hmm. a one-page CV, one showreel, two or three headshots? What should they have? Or what would you like to... What would make your life easier as a casting director to receive from a potential singer, dancer, or actor?
Initially, on the cover letter, I think it also sounds really silly and obvious, but it's to the person you're writing to. I often, listen, we all use templates, but sometimes people, and not just once, a lot of the time, send me an email that's copy and paste from another person. So their name says, dear, not Graham, it's dear some other person. And I get it. We've all made the mistakes before. But I think just take that extra second to check you're writing to the right person. A really concise cover letter. So it's to the point, saying why you're writing, what your experience is, you know, what you want. Is it you want an audition? Is it what are you writing about? And then a clear link to your showreel or online CV or whatever process you have with that. And then a nice sign off and, you know, and then regards whoever. I think that's going to get you an initial first meeting well. Like, you know, the first interaction is strong. I think it's important for performers to have everything on viewable, easy links. Like a big one is having your showreel on a link like an unlisted YouTube or a Dropbox. If you go on like a WeTransfer situation, we all like WeTransfer for certain things if it's to send directly to one person. But the problem with WeTransfer is you have to download the stuff onto your desktop. Now, I can be getting sometimes up to 3,000 people for one project. If I downloaded 3,000 showreels, it'd be mental.
You don't have the hard drive for that. No.
I haven't got the space. But also on top of it, a lot of the time those people name their showreel image 674 or something. Now, who is image 674? Like, it's much easier being as a link and I can go straight to their profile. And it's then also able to be shared easier. You can have it in different spreadsheets, share it with your internal team. It's much quicker to do that. And if you are using those, say, things like unlisted YouTube or Vimeo or those type of platforms, just get your friends to check they open on their devices first as well. Because often I get, you know, a YouTube link, I open it and it says it's private and I can't open that. And I think just taking those extra little bit of time to get, you know, on top of it will massively help you. You don't want to be going through all that effort of sending emails and then you're the person that then doesn't get viewed because your stuff doesn't open. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes I will write to people and say, hey, your stuff doesn't open. But when you're going through that many emails, it's really difficult to have that correspondence with everybody. So.
And when we're in an industry when, like, obviously mental health is so important and sometimes you don't get feedback, sadly, we need to get more feedback. But, like, if you might be sometimes taking yourself out the running, if your link is literally private or you're sending that email, which you think is quick for you, but it's not easy to process for you, kind of springboarding off that now and digital presence and how we know, whether that's because of the rise of self-tapes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Social media is such a fantastic platform. I always talk about it to clients when I'm lecturing because it is a tool that can be used for good. Yes, used for bad, but can be used for good. As a casting specialist and a choreographer, because quite often you would potentially find new talent on social media, why is social media important to you in the realm of casting? And what should a performer potentially do with their social media to make themselves more employable or more discoverable?
I think your social media is important as an addition to your casting profile. I think, you know, you you might not get hired through social media first. Like that's in some particular cases, but I think it's a good as an addition. So keeping up to date with clean content and keep it professional. I think that's so important. Like if you want to have a really fun Instagram where you slag things off or something, be my guest, but maybe keep that privately for your friends. I think your initial output wants to be of a professional standard and celebrating work you've maybe done before or celebrating classes you've taken or whatever that might be. And I think that's keeping it clean and to the point will be really helpful as an addition. You never know, someone might, you know, be deciding between two people and want to see more and they look into that. Or I think also to be discoverable, you want to keep your content fresh. If you've not got something on there for say maybe 3 years, that's not maybe necessarily your casting bracket now. So keep moving through that. And if there's something you don't like on there, maybe just take it off and put your best bits on there. You know, your grid itself is like your window display. So if you are filling it with things you wouldn't necessarily want to show off, then you don't need them there. I think a constant post, like, but not all the time is fine. Like as long as you're consistent, that's what I'm looking for, consistent, it's going to represent you in the best possible way.
Exactly. Don't have that shop window full of bric-a-brac. Like, exactly. Especially if it's a shop window for you as a business. If it's a private shop window, your social media is private, fair enough. But if it is your business run, that window needs to be clear. Now, that's great. So let's talk about online and offline presence and the in-person you and the online you need to match. We've even said that before about when you send in an email, you would say hello in real life. Headshots. What are your thoughts on how often should someone update a headshot? How many should they submit to you as a casting professional, whether you are looking through, say, Spotlight or getting those sent directly in your inbox? How many headshots do you want? And how long should someone be clinging on to that headshot? Like, cause we've all done it. Headshots are expensive. Yeah. But how often should they update and how many would you like to receive?
Yeah, I think headshots for me, one is the most important for the job that you're going for. You know, you should have a portfolio of different ones for different things, but not every brand is wanting the same look and you might be able to fall into multiple looks. So, you know, if you've got, say, let's use Spotlight as an example, a profile that you can have multiple on, fine, have multiple on, and just have your main one as one you want to represent yourself as. But if you're emailing, maybe you need to send the one or something for initial meeting on that matches the brand. I think that's, if you want to add a couple more, that's totally fine. But I don't think we need like 8 or 9 profile shots. I think just the one or even two maximum. But updating them. Now, I think that is really dependent on what you're wanting to achieve within your journey and your career. Everyone's path in this business is different and everyone wants different things. Yeah. I think if you're actively auditioning a lot and your casting bracket is changing, you should know that yourself as well when you see yourself. You need to update them more frequently. When I say that, I just mean like once a week. But I do have mean like,
you know, cute today.
No, maybe like once a year, if you feel like you are massively changing or you're having a drastic hair change or you're whatever it might be, you know, you need to think about updating them. If you are not changing the way you look that often and you are somebody that isn't necessarily aging at all, then you might want to prolong that a little bit more. But I do think you just need to be realistic and find those friends or relatives, whoever it might be, or business colleagues that are honest with you. I think that is so important, having those people in this industry that say, that's not the best representation of you, because sometimes you see yourself different to what the outside world does. I know I do that sometimes. I think I have had mentors over my time that have said to me, Graham, that's not necessarily the best thing for you. So having those people that will maybe say, you are falling into a different bracket now, and I think you could have some really beautiful new shots done that might open up more doors. So yeah, I would definitely think it is personal to the person, but it's also being realistic as well.
Yeah. And it's that whole concept of show versus tell, where you need to, you need to be able to tell me how good you are via that email, but you need to show me your product. Make sure that your headshots are on brand to your casting type. The headshot shouldn't necessarily just be, I look really pretty, but is that actually in your casting type? Is it appropriate? Does it still match who you are? Or are you using that one from years ago?
On brand is so important, what you said. I think that's a huge thing for any success. Anyone that's going to be successful in this industry has to understand what their brand is and what they offer and what they're going to bring. And if you do that, I think you massively get ahead and you see results faster. I think if you don't really know what your brand is, you don't really know who you are, I think you might still be successful, but it's going to take a lot longer to figure that out. So I think that's something that it's important that performers take some time to really analyze themselves in a really positive way and look and think, well, what is my area of expertise and where do I excel and what do I want to explore further, rather than necessarily what they like doing, because we all know I like certain things that aren't necessarily what I fit into, but I do like them.
Very true.
And I think that's important to remember.
And I love that you said that, because again, your brand helps identify what you are selling, what jobs you want to do. And if you don't know what you're selling, you don't know who's buying those skills. You don't know what jobs will align with your values. So I think, yes, and I bang on about that all the time. So go back and listen to every episode of this podcast. But yes, we talk a lot about branding in it. All these tips, well, not all of them, but a lot of these are in your book, which is 50 Tips Audition Success. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're not going to give all those away. Go and buy the book from all good retailers. What is maybe, you work with people that are fresh grads all the way up to seasoned veterans. What is maybe one thing or one actionable tip someone listening and watching this can go away and action today when it comes to their creative career?
I think if it's be one tip out of that book that's going to be a now, is one tip I love is remember why you started. And I think that's really key, because in this business, it's very easy to latch onto the negative and forget the positive. It really is easy to do that. If you've been to lots of auditions and getting told no or being cut in the first round, you're going to get it takes a certain type of human to not let that bother them. And that's just being human nature, you know? So then you start to maybe lose your mojo with it and you start thinking, well, why am I doing this? Yeah. Maybe it's time I need to change career or blah, blah, blah. And your focus goes wrong. And I think what you need to remember is you started it because you loved it, regardless of when you started and how you got into it and what age it was. You definitely started doing this because you really loved doing it, because you wouldn't be doing it otherwise. Yeah. It's a hobby that turned into a profession. So if you remember that, it instantly gives you, hang on, I've had a bad time lately of not even getting in the audition room, say, like, you know, not getting called in, and it's frustrating, but I'm doing this because I know it's what I love. And when I get those opportunities, they are going to be so worth it and they're going to outweigh those bad days. So that to me is something that actually will take you through your auditions and give you a different mindset. And mindset is so important. If you are in a good headspace, you can achieve a lot more than in a bad headspace. And I think we've seen that not only in our industry, across lots of different things in life. So I think if you really try and adopt that within your work as a performer, and then into creative work later on down the line, if you want to go into that area, you are going to massively see huge, huge level of going upward success.
So let's talk then about the resilience in rejection and the, yes, it's easy for us to sit here and say rejection is redirection, which it is. But when you're in that moment and you felt that gut punch, it's hard. But everything you said there, I think is fantastic. Because once you can maybe start analysing that audition as data, what worked well, what was in your control, what wasn't, you will start auditioning better. Do you have any tips for your building that mental resilience, or just anything you see in young performers that you think, hey, stop doing that now, like you deserve a space at that table?
Yeah, listen, I'm a liar if I sit here and say, oh, don't let it bother you, like, you know, because it's going to, and it's bothered me in the past. So, you know, I think anyone is going to, after so much rejection, get down on themselves. Yeah. But what the difference is picking yourself back up again and moving forwards and finding ways to combat the rejection. So if you feel uninspired because you're not getting what you want at that moment in time, and it just feels like a constant bashing against the wall, go and watch something that inspires you. Like sometimes, like whether that be a musical, whether that be a music concert, whether that be whatever, it could be anything, a play, anything. Go and see that piece if it's going to inspire you, because it'll give you that drive about you, or read a book that's inspirational, whatever it might be. You know, everyone's got different ways of doing that. But you should really find that side of things and hone in on the positives. Like if you are getting called into the room, that is massively positive. We're in a situation with our industry now where there is so many people looking for auditions with not enough casting is going on at the time. And even if there is castings, those people can't see like 3,000 people a day. It's just impossible. So therefore people have to be pre-screened and not necessarily getting in the room. Now that can feel really rubbish doing that. And then, but if you are getting in the room, you've already done something really positive that day. think, well, I'm presenting something that people like. Then once you're in the room, if you get through, say, the first round of something, you're doing another positive. I think we always look at that end result. Oh, I didn't get through. Oh, I didn't, whatever. And I think rather than it be the didn't, you should really think of what you did. And it's the same as, like, even if you had a dry spell and you haven't auditioned because you haven't been called in, what have you been doing in that time? If you've been going to class, if you've been having singing lessons, if you've been going over to dance classes, whatever it might be, and working on it, they are such positive things. You might not feel it there and then, but if you hone in on that, wow, this week I felt great in whoever's class. Great, this week I found a new song in my rep and I've worked it with my singing teacher and now I have that there for when I've got that audition for that show. You are creating positives and you've got to really hone in on that. And we have all been through bad times. And I think even the most successful people and people that we aspire towards and think, wow, I'd love to have a career like that person and our role models, will all say they've been through times when they haven't necessarily had those gigs. And I think you've got to remember that it's a journey. And yes, we know people that walk out of college and book that massive, huge leading role in a huge show. That really isn't the norm. That's a very small amount of people that have that. Yeah. So you've got to remember that it's about stepping stones. And we've seen those people too that have had slow starts to their careers and now are one of the most successful people in their year group at college. And it's 10 years down the line and they're booking. So you've just got to remember it's a journey and it's a stepping stone all the time.
You've got to start building or cultivating the environment for success, haven't you? Yeah. And I think there's so many factors of that there's that saying, your network is your net worth. So not only your network of potential job opportunities, but your network of your support system, your friends, your family. We have voice noted each other or text each other multiple times when we're performing, trying to put the world to right, like having that support system. But then also, as you said, they're looking at what was success, what worked well. Did you get the reply in the email? What did I change? Was it the subject line? Was it a different headshot? Yeah. So I think that's so lovely that from the casting point of view, you've kind of unpacked that a bit to be like, there's multiple ways to hopefully incentivize yourself in this industry.
Yeah, and to touch on that, when you said about, that worked, I think you've got to remember you are the business and you're the product. I think that is really hard to sometimes put into perspective. And I try and tell people, like, if something's not working, if you look at other brands, like famous brands that are nothing to do with performing, like a type of food or a type of body spray or something, if those products aren't selling, they look at different ways of selling them, whether that's because it's on promotion, it's been moved to different parts of the store, it's had new images, it's got new packaging, it's got all those things that, maybe even the product itself needs a little bit of new ingredients. And that's, from a performance point of view, a bit more training. Yeah. So I think if something isn't working for a normal product away from a performer, they do something about it, those businesses.
Exactly.
So what's different about it being as your skills? If you are feeling like, what's letting me down is my skill, that's your ingredients. So then go to more classes, or maybe it's my look, which is the packaging. Think about maybe judging that up a little bit.
So. And I love that about moving it somewhere different in the shop. Like, say you always buy an iPhone and someone's got an Android, and if they love iPhones, they're never going to buy an Android no matter how much I try and throw it at them. So it's like there will be some casting directors, producers, agents that will never hire you. However, what about the other 50,000 people that will buy into that product? So I think, this is taking almost that critical thinking that I think sometimes as performers we don't have, because we're just always comparing and we're in a world now when I can buy something tomorrow, but it's actually the real work or product's longevity comes in like the groundwork.
It really does.
So let's quickly jump onto something new that's definitely started since the last podcast episode, and that is Stammers Matter. You can tell me, charitable status? I don't know.
It's a CIC.
CIC. Yeah. So Stammers Matter, you have a stammer yourself and you are such an advocate for making sure that there's visibility within casting process. So talk to me a bit more about Stammers Matter, how that idea come about and why you are championing that.
I was born with a stammer and it's so interesting because when I'm talking right now, I'm appearing as a fluent speaker and I think that's always very jarring to people when they hear me stammer because they're like, hang on. And also the education around stammering has not really been there. I think it's often like, you struggle to say your name, but then you sing and you sound beautiful. So yay, it's cured. Yeah. Or it's like the King's Speech situation where, and that's a true story, that film, but it's very much like an overcoming storyline and fixing something. Now, I had a stammer when I was younger, through all my childhood years. I had a lot of speech therapy and through my later teens in through my early professional career through like my 30s, I would say my stammer was very covert and didn't really necessarily affect me that much. I was kind of in control of it in a way. But since my 30s, it has been coming back a lot. And that's actually really quite a normal thing. Like when you speak to other stammerers, it's quite normal if as a child or stammer to reappear later in life. And I am generally, when I'm chatting like this or in a work situation or at the front of a room full of hundreds of people, or like I also do things like dance conventions where I like, you know, can do masterclasses for all these people. A lot of people would never know I had a stammer because I'm talking like this. And then when I'm off duty and like, you know, even with you, I had a coffee before and I was stammering. That's the reality of my stammer. And yeah. I think my hardest thing is recalling names, like including my own. I know what the name is, but I just often can't say it on command. It's just,
Well, I remember you telling a story when you went to Starbucks once.
Yeah,
Obviously you say your name and obviously it's not me saying anything about that particular coffee chain, but you say your name and the person reacted in a way, they laughed. And again, it wasn't necessarily a malicious, but that's not the reaction you would want or expect.
Yeah, no. I ordered the coffee fluently like this. So then as soon as they asked my name, I couldn't say it. So that's a bit jarring to them. But that's what the education is about. So stammers matter, what I created it for, was to combat those type of things in great education. But it was also with our industry. I think, you know, diversity is really a lot more understood than it was. There's still a lot of work to be done. But I think a lot of people now within casting decisions and production companies always say, well, we would really like to make this accessible and we'd like to make this diverse within its choices. But I often do find disfluency is often forgotten about in that. And I feel that when it is used, it's used as an overcoming storyline, or it's the piece is about stammering. It's not about integrating it. And it'd be really lovely to see that in there. But I also feel like I want to try and change that within casting auditions. So people that maybe have those invisible disabilities are feeling as though they're welcomed in this room and the same way as anyone else. Like, I do feel like if you do have an invisible disability, it's important to flag that with a casting director when you first apply. I feel that too, because we can then make that adjustment in the room for you. Like a big one's like for a singing audition, often you'll then have to say, I'm singing whatever before you start. And, you know, that for a stammer can be absolutely terrifying, where, you know, the system's not necessarily going to change because that is how audition runs. And we're going to need to have that communication with the pianist. But if the team knows that there is a stammer there, which might affect your delivery of that, just let them know before. And if the team are good at their job, they will have that marked on their form. And I think it's time for change. And it's quite an interesting time, like to see the change in it, you know, with BBC implementing it in two of their biggest reality TV programs in the last couple of months, and seeing stammering integrated as just being a different way of speaking is so, so important, rather than it being people feeling sorry for that person. Like, I don't want anyone to feel sorry for me as a stammer, but I do also want people to understand that sometimes I might stammer when I say my name to you, and it doesn't mean my worth in this industry is any less. It doesn't mean you shouldn't trust me for that job. If anything, it makes people listen more because it takes me longer to say what I want to say.
Yeah.
So
I guess it's that thin line between, well, maybe it shouldn't be a thin line, but between sympathy and empathy. Mm-hmm. And it's this understanding. And ahead of this, you know what helps you prepare. So I sent you the questions ahead of time. Yeah. You flagged about names. So not like we randomly list those names. You know what I mean? We wasn't like putting on industry names. So you can mitigate that to make yourself feel at ease. And you probably want people that come into audition to feel at ease as well, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And there is quite a few performers with a stammer who have been really successful, and I've spoken with those, and we all have similar, you know, different experiences, but we do all have similar thoughts that, you know, day one of rehearsals is the worst when you go around the room and have to say, hi, I'm Graham and I'm the choreographer, or whatever you are. And I think I just think it's important to make it known within teams, just because I think anyone's going to want anyone to ever feel uncomfortable, but if people don't know, it is maybe going to create that. So anything that's for access needs, I think, whether, you know, I'm talking from a personal thing of stammering, but I think anything as a performer, you need to be proud of who you are. And I think the industry has got much better at embracing difference and diversity. And I think you want to be proud of your difference, and not back in the day when we wanted to all just fit in, you know. It's even like things like accents back in the day, like on the BBC, you would never have an accent back, you know, years and years ago. Everyone had to speak, receive pronunciation. Now you've got all regional accents and stuff, and it's so normalized. And I think that's a very early day change. And now we see all types of people getting jobs. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And we want to keep going in that direction.
Because regionality and accents, that's all part of someone's brand, isn't it? Yeah. And like, as we know, people buy into brands that they know, like, and trust. So now it's just, as I said, that re-education or understanding that that could be your USP. That's your superpower sometimes. If you have something that's different, like, don't necessarily shy away from it.
Yeah.
So now, obviously, you're still heavily in the industry as a performer, but you've got Stammers Matters. Has your vision or version of success changed over the years? And do you have maybe different levels of success then?
Yeah, I honestly think my biggest definition of success is if you're happy. And that really is that. And I think maybe I didn't think that when I was younger, I would be chasing those titles and those, you know, those obvious successful things that we have in this industry. Like if you've played X role or you're working with that person, you're successful. Now, they are successes and they should never be taken away from anybody. But there is all different levels of success. And, you know, I think you don't necessarily need to be in what you think is your dream role to be successful. If you are happy with what you're doing and you feel you're moving forward, then you're being successful. It's also, success for me is about balance. It's also about being able to find those times to switch off, to enjoy being with your friends, family, relationships, whatever you're in, as well as working. I think that's true success. There's people I know that are booked and blessed all the time, but they sometimes crave for more me time. And then it's a question of, well, is that really their true success? Would, if they took a little bit away, would they be more successful, actually? I think it's a personal thing, success. And I think you've just got to be true to yourself and find your happiness. And if you do, then you are the most successful person in the business.
And it's that whole idea of that self-reflection of, am I doing this job because I think the industry expects me to do it because ABCD has led me to this point? Yeah. Or am I doing it because I want to? And I think that's hard sometimes, isn't it? Because we don't always have a lot of power in the freelance world or creative world. We're waiting, we're sat by the phone. So it's actually thinking, no, what do I have power in? And maybe what can I control and what can I not control? Yeah. And we've probably both been there when we've done jobs that may be massive CV jobs, but that wasn't the most fun.
Yeah.
And you've done jobs when you're like, that's so low down on your CV credit wise, but you laugh so much or you got to travel. There's so much to it, I think.
Or you met someone that necessarily might have like, change your path. Like you might have met someone on that job that was a little gig that you was crazy, but there in that job there was someone that now you work with on another role, or you became a great friend. I met you that way. We were doing like a very small gig, and then we've become friends for years and years and years. And I think, you know, you should never look down on any type of work and just be open to any opportunity, because you never know where it's going to lead you.
Because we met. It was the panto we met, or was it the aquatic ceremony?
How much one was first? I did do a panto with you. I also did the aquatic ceremony, and we also did some other random little things.
Like corporates,
too.
Yeah. So we did this like panto tour, which probably one of the key takeaways is probably our friendship. And I think what's great, I love about you as a friend, is your business mindset. So we can talk industry adjacent about our brands and businesses. But like on that tour, like we had to like, we stayed in like some weird hotels, and like we did the opening ceremony for the aquatics at the Summer Olympics. Mm. Like sponsored by Speedos, like doing a jazz routine in Speedos, which now I think, what was life? Bizarre. And also like think as dancers, like body dysmorphia, like I was probably in like some of the best shape of my life, but I was still so paranoid.
Yeah.
But there I am in Speedos, where now I'm like, I would love to be confident enough to like jump in Speedos. Quickly, just piggybacking off your last point there, we was talking about success, and it's the whole notion. I was having this conversation with someone the other day about what they thought freelance was. And they thought freelance was 100% of the time, I'm just dancing. And I was like, that's amazing. But like, I know people now in the West End that still have side jobs, sometimes because they want to, and they've got other passion, other skills. And often a lot of time because they need that money. So freelance could be full-time freelance. It could be part-time freelance whilst you teach or you choreograph or you lecture. It could be you have a whole other job that you freelance for your annual leave and your weekend. So as a casting director, what are your views on performers having that side hustle? Those skills enrich, well, in my opinion, those skills and that life experience enrich you as a performer and make you more 360, you want to employ them. What are your views as a casting professional and someone with a side skill or a side hustle?
I think it's amazing having a side hustle, yeah, and a side job. I think the big thing to remember there, though, is to make sure it allows you to have the time to be able to go to auditions or go to class or do your thing. If your side hustle becomes too big and takes over all your time, you're not necessarily going to achieve what you want to do within your performing. However, if that's what you want to do in the end, great, go and do that. But I think time management is important. That's a massive skill. But I do think, you know, no one's going to judge you for finding ways of, you know, making money and having other hobbies. This industry is not all just about one thing. You don't have to, you know, some people we'll speak to will say, oh, you need to put all your eggs into that to get what you want. I'm a little bit different with that. I do think it's important to channel all your energy into areas you want to be successful in. And I do think flitting here and flitting there is not necessarily going to get you where you want to be. But I do think that by having other skills, it does make you more resilient, more employable, and is going to keep you afloat and not necessarily make you feel the pressure and the stress of, well, I haven't worked now for the last month and nothing's coming in for me. Yeah. You know, if you have those other things, and also like we said, like side hustles might become my main hustle, and you know, right now you might be focused on performing, but actually that side hustle is something that actually goes alongside it, and it's something that's not performing, but it's something within the entertainment industry, and that might in years to come become more of a prominent feature within your work. So yeah, like never be embarrassed or judging yourself on a side hustle. God, you should be proud of what you're doing and go and do it.
I remember when I was doing Bridgerton season one, go back and watch it, Daphne could have picked me. I was obviously almost a full-time journalist back by that point, then using a lot of annual leave. So all the money I earned from being like a series regular dancer in Bridgerton, I saved my part of my deposit for my house along with my partner. And I remember someone saying, oh, they were so sad that they couldn't do that. I was way older than that person at the time. I was like, I've got this other like passion now. So for you, you're reinvesting that in your career, whether that is going to class, headshots, your gym membership, paying your rent to be in London for the auditions. So like, we're just at different points. And now that person like does do other things as well. And that's fine. I think it's just knowing that different points in your journey, that side hustle may take over or may not, but it's valuable. Two quick questions before I release the shackles and let you run out of the studio. Quickly tell me about your associate program, because people now, not only can they find you on social media, they may see you taking an audition or choreographing a production. Yeah. You've got your book, but you also have your associates program.
Yeah, my associates program is more for before you start going off to college and things. It's for my youth side of things.
But it's based up in Nottingham.
It's in Nottingham, yeah. I set that up, one, because I just love teaching and things. I think that's really important to pass back to the next generation. But another reason I set it up too was I really noticed there was a lot of things like this, where lots of dancing and stuff, but there wasn't necessarily much of singing and dancing together. And I feel that's a really important skill, particularly a lot of these young aspiring students say, I want to do musical theatre. And then you say, oh, well, you need to sing. Oh, I don't want to sing. Well, or they're underconfident with singing. And it's like, well, musical theatre, it's quite a large part of it. So that's what that was all about. And it's wonderful because like I've got, you know, all the way up to 18 and some younger students, and some of the younger ones are, you know, booking shows at the Curve and UK tours. Like I've just had four of them. They have their regular teaching and stuff, and they just come to me on a Sunday, and their four of them have just been in Sound of Music at Curve, which I think it's amazing. And it's a real testament to their skill with their regular teachers. And then bringing different skills from the work we do with them as well. So I do love doing that. And then the further part of that is I also go and teach in different random studios in London, and, you know, I do open classes, and I do that, one, because again, I love it. But two, it's also a great way of connecting with new talent and seeing new people and also inspiring myself as well as inspiring them. I think you've got to remember when you're educating, it's a two-way stream. Like, you know, seeing dancers that are using your work in a new way, I think makes you excited, and it makes you think, I want to do more of this. And it's making me direct my creativity and skills into new ways without them even knowing that's happening.
And I love that you said it's the confidence as well, because for someone who literally had one song in the rep, putting on the Ritz, and that was my rock pop, that was my legit, just at a different tempo. Everything. But it was the confidence. And it wasn't until I started sitting on the other side of things on casting panels, when people would come in and they wouldn't be the strongest singer, but they could command the room and they were confident. And I thought, Wow. That, and that sells it, doesn't it? So I think confidence,
quite amazing.
Confidence is key. So it's so lovely that you're working with the next generation. Yeah. So my next thing before I let you go, it's new. You didn't have this in season one, so you have no advantage. This is kind of a rapid fire, but it's light, it's fluffy. And it's called Lights, Questions, Action. I'm going to ask you 10 quick fire questions just about your life or industry topics. And you've just got a first thing that comes into your mind.
Okay.
Question one. What was your first professional job?
First professional job was a dancer on a cruise ship.
Favorite port you've been to on a cruise ship?
New York in Manhattan.
First thing you notice on a potential dancer, singer, actor when they walk into the room?
I notice how engaged they are in being in that room.
What was your go-to audition song? Or if someone said to me, audition now for a show, what would you whack out of the rep?
Not now, but I did used to sing On the Street Where You Live, which was an awful song for me. But I did choose that as my first audition song and never used it again after that.
Soon shredder, discard.
Gone, yeah.
First musical you saw?
Oh, I can't remember now, but...
Well, that left the biggest impression then, should we say?
I remember being young and seeing 42nd Street and loving it.
Classic. Favourite song you have when you teach to warm you up?
Oh, good. I like Let's Get Loud.
Classic.
It's a classic and it gets you going.
It, four generations, really.
And everyone loves it.
All the parents outside are like, yes, let's get loud. Is there an industry keyword or buzzword you wish to retire? So whether that could be I'm reaching out because via an email, but is there like a keyword or buzzword that you hate that you would retire?
I can't think. I'm sure there is because I see a lot of things. What? Not a buzzword, but it's just sending your link to your showreel. I want that to retire. No one ever just send a link, always write a cover letter. And that's not a word, but that's it.
Props in self-tapes or showreels, yes or no?
Like a bowler hat.
Or whatever, character choice.
Listen, I think if you're doing it well, be my guest. But obviously, you don't want to make it look too amateur.
You work in casting. If someone's cast someone to be you, Graham Pickering, the feature film, would it be?
I would love it to be someone really cool, but I'm not really cool. So I'm not sure it's going to be that, or someone extremely handsome, which again, I'm just average.
You're a spring chicken.
I can't think, but hopefully someone incredible.
It could be like Jake Gyllenhaal, perhaps.
Ryan Gosling. I'll take Ryan Gosling.
Me, I'm actually available after this podcast. Nothing else booked. So perfect. I could play Graham Pickering, starting off with our Speedo years.
Love that.
And then my last question, you've just been on my podcast. Are you someone who likes a text or do you like to leave a voice note that's a podcast length?
I do that. Everyone knows me always says, oh, it's a Pickering podcast. When I voice note, I try not to do it. But sometimes it's easier to explain it on a voice note. But I'm going to say voice note.
Voice note. Perfect. Well, all that's left to say is thank you so much for watching or listening. And don't forget to subscribe and comment wherever you do get your podcasts. And I'll see you soon on The Business or Show Business.